Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 1191 of the Juice Box Podcast. Bonnie is a 57-year-old architect who has had type 1 diabetes since she was 18 years old. She's got a couple things going on. I don't want to ruin all the fun for you, but there's frozen shoulder, a skin condition, and much more. While you're listening today, please don't forget that nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always, please, please, always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan. When you place your first order for AG1 with my link, you'll get 5 free travel packs and a free year's supply of vitamin D. drinkag1.com/juicebox. Help out with type 1 diabetes research by going to t1dexchange.org/juicebox and completing the survey. That's all you have to do. You need to be a U.S. resident who has type 1 or is the caregiver of someone with type 1. Takes you 10 minutes. Your answers to simple questions will help move type 1 diabetes research forward. And don't forget to check out the private Facebook group, Juicebox Podcast Type 1 Diabetes, with 50,000 members. There is very likely someone in there you're going to like. Someone's going to have answers you need. Someone will be funny, thoughtful, kind, nice. We got so much in there. Go check it out. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the Dexcom G7, made for all types of diabetes. Dexcom G7 can be used to manage type 1, type 2, and gestational diabetes. You're going to see the speed, direction, and number of your blood sugar right on your receiver or smartphone device. Dexcom.com/juicebox. Today's episode is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes, a company that's bringing people together to redefine what it means to live with diabetes. Later in this episode, I'll be speaking with Jalen. He was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 14. He's 29 now. He's going to tell you a little bit about his story. And then later at the end of this episode, you can hear my entire conversation with Jalen. To hear more stories with Medtronic champions, go to MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox or search the hashtag Medtronic Champion on your favorite social media platform. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by CozyEarth.com. Cozy Earth is where I get my clothing, linens, and towels from. They are incredibly comfortable and temperate. I love them. I really do love them. And I love that I can give you an offer code that will save you 40% off of your entire order. Just use the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout and you will save 40% at CozyEarth.com.
I also think that you get a lot of visual cues when you talk to people, such that if suddenly you want to speak and your mouth is hanging open, I can't tell if I don't see you.
I have made nearly 1,300 episodes of this podcast. Are you telling me I've been doing it wrong?
Oh, no, not at all.
Do I get to see you or you just get to see me?
Oh, no, you get to see me, too. Absolutely.
All right. Hey. There you go.
Hey.
Also, you're going to get to hear me. I'm going to test my blood sugar. So while we're getting set up here, I'm recording you, which I normally wouldn't do this early in the call, but I'm wearing a CGM.
Very cool. Let me look at mine while we're... And well, you're doing that. I'll do that. I'm at 150. So
I just got out of the shower and it's telling me I'm low. And I don't imagine that's true, although I have not eaten in a long time. So I'm going to test myself here with the Contour Next Gen blood glucose meter, contournext.com/juicebox. Let's see. I have struck my finger. Blood is rushing to the area. Not really rushing. I'm getting it. Actually, this meter doesn't need a lot of blood, so... not a big deal. You know what? Maybe it would help if I had my glasses on. Old.
Let's oh, yeah.
Goddamn thing. Okay. There's my little blood drop. And let's see what we got here for my blood sugar.
What do we got?
Survey says 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. 95. I knew my blood sugar wasn't low.
When you started counting down and you said 5, I thought that was your blood sugar. I thought, oh, that's perfect.
What are you, from Canada?
I am.
Oh, okay.
I'm bilingual when it comes to blood sugars.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, so I'm looking here. So I went in the shower and it took a dip. I don't know why. I'm going to calibrate because I don't want to hear it beep at me while you and I are doing this. What did I say, 95?
You did.
All right.
I did silence my phone.
I'm going to do that too. A minute ago, it says I'm 70 now. It's like a little, I don't know. Interesting. It's been really interesting to watch because last night I on purpose ate pizza and Chinese food and my blood sugar like didn't move. And in the past it would have, but I'm using Wegovy now. So basically it's Ozempic. It's the same molecule.
Of course.
And I just don't seem like my blood sugar just won't spike anymore. Like I want to be clear. I don't have diabetes. I'm not pre-diabetic or anything like that. But if I would have eaten a couple of slices of pizza and some Chinese food and some rice, I would have seen a 150, maybe 140, something like that. Nothing. It went up to like 95. It stayed there for a couple of hours and went right back down in the mid 80s. It was pretty interesting.
Did you exercise yesterday?
I try not to exercise at all. So no, didn't do it yesterday either. Okay. So we're doing this, what I guess they would call Bass Ackwards. Because I would normally tell you all the stuff before we started recording that I'm going to tell you now. So everybody's going to get to hear what I say to people before we're recording. I don't care what you say. I am not going to stop you from saying anything. If you go in a really crazy, weird direction, I'm going to go with you. If you use people's names, please be comfortable that you can. The worst thing that could happen is that you get to the end and say, like, I said my uncle's name five times. I need you to go take it out. It creates an editing nightmare. And other than that, I wouldn't be overly specific about where you live. And that's pretty much it. So I usually now I say, do you have any questions or concerns?
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
I'm nervous.
You're nervous?
Nervous energy.
Can you push your hair back away from that microphone for me? Thank you. Don't worry about being nervous. I'll make you comfortable. And if I don't, I failed. So it's on me, not you. What I'll say is last thing, don't need to use your last name in a second. Just kind of take a deep breath, introduce yourself, give me a couple of sentences about who you are. We'll start talking. Hour from now, it'll be over.
Well,
this episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by Cozy Earth. And right now, I'm looking at CozyEarth.com to see what's going on. I got, look at this, bamboo pajama set for ladies, the jogger pants for ladies, looks like plush lounge socks. That's one of Oprah's favorite things. There's the bath collection. We love the waffle towels, but there's also premium plush bath towels. Everything that you see here can be had for 40% off with the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout. Even the sheets. Now, we use the bamboo sheets. You may choose different linens. I don't know what you're going to love when you get to CozyEarth.com, but we sleep on bamboo sheets from Cozy Earth. They are incredibly comfortable, and I bought them myself with my own money using my own offer code, JUICEBOX, at checkout. 40% off is what I saved. You can as well at CozyEarth.com.
My name is Bonnie, and I live in the Midwest, originally from Canada. And if I tell you my profession, probably everyone will know who I am because it's a small world of my profession, but I'm not hiding. I'm an architect. So
saying that you're Bonnie, an architect from the Midwest, is going to tell people who you are?
At least.
Oh, you're in the Midwest of Canada.
No, I live in the United States now.
Oh, you live in the United States now. Okay. Because I was like, in Canada, there must only be one architect. But that's not it. That's not what we're talking about, right?
No.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, if you get a call from somebody and it's like, I heard you on a podcast, please email me immediately because I'll be baffled that that happened because you're an architect.
I think I would be baffled as well.
I think if I went on another podcast and said, my name's Scott, I make a podcast called the Juice Box Podcast, I still don't think anybody would know who the hell I was if they were listening. So I would be thrilled if somebody knows you from that.
Okay. I mean, if I got very specific and said I'm from, you know, this portion of this state.
Oh, okay. All right. You didn't build a really famous building or something, did you? Design something really famous?
Reasonably famous, yes, in the state of Michigan, yes.
Interesting.
I won a competition to design a memorial for law enforcement officers who died in the line of duty.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
And
I thought you were going to say lawn furniture. But you paused. I was like, what?
I don't design lawn furniture, but I know architects. Architects do design furniture.
I thought you were going to say I designed a building about lawn furniture. And I was like, oh, this doesn't make any sense at all. I don't think she's as famous as she thinks she is.
But, no, I'm not that famous.
That's hilarious. But, well, that's cool. How did you, is that something you always wanted to do? Is it something you thought of as a child, or did you pick it up in college?
Always wanted to be an architect. My father was an engineer, and I just got that way of thinking in my head, inherited that way of thinking. I always wanted to be an architect.
Do you have that engineer's mind?
I think so.
Yeah.
Very linear way of thinking, very mathematical way of thinking. 1 + 1 = 2 mm-hmm. type of thing, which, you know, leads me to my frustration of diabetes, having diabetes, but yes.
Do you have that sort of social awkwardness that sometimes engineers have?
I'm not an overly social person. I'm a very visual person. I'm the type of person who likes to sort of watch, mm-hmm. sit back and watch.
Interesting. You know, you said that you were a little nervous. I don't normally do the podcast with video on, and we have it on today, right? And I've lost so much weight over the last 9 months. My brain doesn't always remember, if that makes sense. So I'm sitting here. I spent the first couple of moments we were talking trying not to obsess on whether or not my stomach looked big in the in the video.
I'm not watching your stomach.
But you're looking at me now. Do I look heavy in the front?
Not at all.
No. Do you know I think I do.
Oh.
I'm wired from having been overweight a lot of my life. So just see this line in my shirt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's apropos of nothing. It's just the way my shirt's hanging, but I think it's showing you a delineation of where my stomach starts and stops.
Well, we all have a stomach, so. Yeah.
Well, not if I stay on WeGovy much longer. I'm going to be a skeleton, and then I won't have any. Look at,
that's not good either. I mean,
I'm just kidding. Yeah. I'm not going to go that far. But no, I wanted to let you, actually the people listening too, in on that. Like, there's just a wrinkle in my shirt that my brain is telling me, hey, that makes you look fat. Adjust yourself. Isn't that crazy?
I think we are all very self-conscious people. Yes.
Yeah. No, it's really something. Anyway, yeah. I just, you know, it's a podcast. If I don't share these things, then it's not a podcast anymore. It's just
I mean, we don't get the visual when we listen to you. So we have to kind of make up what we think you're doing, where you're sitting. At least I do.
Yeah. That whiteboard behind me has the secrets to the podcast for the next 5 years on it. So.
Can't read it from here. So.
All the things I'm going to do, like literally 1, 2, 3 new series, bunch of different topics we haven't gotten to yet. There's a note over there for me to pay my taxes. Do I want to get the book rights back to my book? Which, by the way, I do, but I don't want to do it badly enough to put any effort into it, in case you're wondering. Saw the list of advertisers. Actually, there's new advertisers up there that people don't know about yet. And then there's this tree Arden drew me. It says big ideas, and then each leaf has a different little like idea about things I should maybe think about doing for the podcast.
That's an interesting mnemonic, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Arden drew it for me the last time she was on. She also wrote the date on it, and she says, every day, change the date. It's good for you. And I was like, yeah, I'm probably not going to do that. So it said July for a really long time. And then I changed it, I thought recently, and I just looked at it. It says November 3rd. It's the 17th. So apparently I'm not on top of that. Anyway, what made you want to come on the podcast?
I think a lot of different reasons, but you know, I used to think of myself as just sort of an ordinary person dealing with diabetes. And I just wanted to come on the podcast and say that, you know, we're all kind of dealing with it every day, 24/7, nonstop.
Yeah.
And yeah, just sort of get that out there and get it out there that frustrations with it, that sort of thing. I've been dealing with it for, oh my goodness, 39 years.
Really?
So, yeah.
How old are you, can I ask?
57.
Oh, wow. You look terrific.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It's good hair genes.
Oh, you know, Bonnie, you and I have a lot in common. I am steadfastly believe I look younger than I am because my hair is nice and dark.
Exactly.
It really is the whole thing. Until if you get pale and then the lines right around your eyes. Yeah. It's the worst part. Yeah.
Okay. So the problem you're going to have as you lose weight, you're going to start to wrinkle, you know, I mean, as as we get older and, you know, our faces stay nice and plump, you don't see as many wrinkles.
I'm very near New York. I'll get Joan Rivers' doctor to pull me back.
Oh, there you go.
Although they eventually killed her, didn't they? Never mind.
I'm just going to use some drafting dots. Do you know what drafting dots are?
I do. Yeah. I'm just going to use... like in a sci-fi movie, there'll actually be things on my face pulling my face backwards. It's not a bad
idea. Exactly.
That's hilarious. Do you know they killed Joan Rivers? This episode is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes. MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox. And now we're going to hear from Medtronic champion, Jalen.
I was going straight into high school, so it was a summer heading into high school.
Was that particularly difficult?
Unimaginable. You know, I missed my entire summer. So I was going to a brand new school. I was around a bunch of new people that I had not been going to school with. So it was hard trying to balance that while also explaining to people what type 1 diabetes was. My hometown did not have an endocrinologist. So I was traveling over an hour to the nearest endocrinologist for children. So, you know, outside of that, I didn't have any type of support in my hometown.
Did you try to explain to people or did you find it easier just to stay private?
I just held back. I didn't really like talking about it. It felt like it was just a repeating record where I was saying things and people weren't understanding it. And I also was still in the process of learning it. So I just kept it to myself, didn't really talk about it.
Did you eventually find people in real life that you could confide in?
I never really got the experience until after getting to college. And then once I graduated college, it's all I see. You know, you can easily search Medtronic champions. You see people that pop up and you're like, wow, look at all this content. And I think that's something that motivates me. Started embracing more, you know, how I live with type 1 diabetes.
To hear Jalen's entire conversation, stay till the very end. MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox to hear more stories from the Medtronic champion community. The Dexcom G7 is sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box podcast, and it features a lightning fast 30-minute warm-up time. That's right, from the time you put on the Dexcom G7 till the time you're getting readings, 30 minutes. That's pretty great. It also has a 12-hour grace period, so you can swap your sensor when it's convenient for you. All that on top of it being small, accurate, incredibly wearable and light, these things, in my opinion, make the Dexcom G7 a no-brainer. The Dexcom G7 comes with way more than just this. Up to 10 people can follow you. You can use it with type 1, type 2, or gestational diabetes. It's covered by all sorts of insurances. And this might be the best part. It might be the best part. Alerts and alarms that are customizable so that you can be alerted at the levels that makes sense to you. Dexcom.com/juicebox. Links in the show notes. Links at juiceboxpodcast.com to Dexcom and all the sponsors. When you use my links, you're supporting the production of the podcast and helping to keep it free and plentiful.
What do you mean they killed Joan
Rivers? Well, I don't think it was a vast conspiracy, but she was getting, you know, plastic surgery pretty constantly. And she was in a surgery center. And I don't know what happened. She threw a clot or had a heart attack or something, but the surgery center was not prepared to handle that level of a medical issue.
Wow.
There are people who think that if she was in a hospital, that they probably could have stopped it.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. That's interesting.
So when I went and had I had surgery on my toe this year, and it was like, you know, a half an hour. They cut it open. They cleaned it out. I think they drilled a bunch of holes in the bone of my toe or whatever.
Oh my God.
By the way, it seems like it's working. As they were like doing the pre-op stuff, the nurse comes over and I said, how are you set up for, you know, heart issues? And she goes, we don't handle heart things here. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. I'm like, what if I have a heart attack while I'm under? You got one of those things? Do you guys know what you're doing? Is there like a girl here who really gets it? And she goes, that's not going to happen. I went, that's what Joan Rivers thought.
Oh God.
She goes, what? And I said, Joan Rivers died in a surgery center like this. And she goes, no, she didn't. I was like, well, yes, she did. And I was like, so if I like, are you going to be able to help? And she's like, oh, yeah, it's fine. By the way, I did not believe her.
Of course she's going to tell you it's fine. Don't worry.
She was thinking like, don't worry, we'll just call 911. I was like, again, that's what they told Joan. Anyway, she really didn't believe me. I went in, I got the surgery. I woke up, like, you know, you wake up, you're like parked like used cars with a bunch of other people. I'm like coming to. I barely have my focus. And this girl is like at the foot of my bed, and she goes, "Oh my God, you weren't kidding. Joan Rivers did die in a surgery center." And I was like, "Is that what you guys have been talking about while I was getting my toe fixed?" And she goes, "Yeah." And then I woke up and we started chatting about it. But anyway,
that's, I don't know what to know.
But my eyes, it's really around your eyes. Like if my eyes just came up a little bit, it would like change everything. It really would about how I look. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not going to do anything about it. Can you imagine? How much would you be willing to spend? I mean, obviously, you're a very famous architect, probably have millions of dollars in the bank. But
I don't practice architecture to make money.
I'm so sorry to hear that. But I always think how much, what percentage of your yearly income would you be willing to give away, if you could, to making a major change to your physical appearance? You know what I mean? How much would seem like too much?
Oh, I could not tell you as a percentage. I think the bigger sacrifice for me would be sort of the time and effort and the recovery and just getting potentially major surgery. Like, I was a wreck when I had to have a colonoscopy when I turned 50, you know? I mean...
Yeah, out of commission for days?
No, it was kind of... I was still on sliding scale MDI, and I'm kind of like, how the hell am I going to do this?
Wait, you were doing sliding scale 7 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Why don't we talk about your diabetes? How old were you when you were diagnosed?
I was 18 and a half.
Okay. Still in Canada?
Oh, yes.
So they gave you an NPH and regular?
Absolutely. Drawing up, I took it twice a day. I used to have to draw up the regular, the clear, then the cloudy, because in case I accidentally injected the clear into the cloudy bottle, it wouldn't ruin the bottle. But if I accidentally injected some cloudy into the clear, it would ruin the clear bottle.
That's what you were thinking about. What province were you in when this happened?
Ontario.
Mm-hmm. All right. They all are a little different. I know that.
I was 18 and a half. I was in my last year of high school because at that time we used to go to high school for 5 years. So that was the equivalent of grade 13. Mm-hmm. We say grade 13, not 13th grade. We don't use we didn't use ordinals in Canada.
You're trying to use fancy words. Do you know I don't know what an ordinal is?
Oh, an ordinal is like first, second, third, as opposed to 1, 2, 3.
Oh. Anyway, short for ordinal. No, don't say anyway. I'm interested. A service boy. Short for ordinal number. Ordinal number. Oh, look at that. Defining a thing's position in a series, first, second, third. Well, look at you, Smarty. Okay, whatever. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I will tell you, I'm a real detail person, and I will go off on a tangent, as will you. So we could go off on some interesting tangents.
I'm recording 3 times today, so one thing you can be sure of is I'm going to be a little more focused today, although it's been 18 minutes, so maybe not. But, but go ahead. You're regular in MPH. You're still in school, even though you're almost 19. I'm sorry. Keep going.
Yes, I am almost 19. It was September, such that I just started my final grade of high school. It was September when I got sick. I was hospitalized for 10 days. And basically, in terms of my diagnosis, I started to lose weight. So I'm 5'4" and a half. I weigh 120s in the 120s. And I was down to 95 pounds at the time, which meant I was looking pretty skeletal.
Yeah.
And I remember being thirsty all the time. And I had a wicked, when I say wicked, that was an understatement. I had a wicked yeast infection. And my mom took me to her gynecologist. And he took one look at me and said, "You're going for a glucose tolerance test." Mm-hmm. And that afternoon, you know, I drank 12 or 16 ounces of pure sugar and felt like absolute crap afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I think my blood sugar was over 30, which would have been in 540-ish.
Okay. Is there other diabetes in your family, any chance?
Nothing.
Okay. No autoimmune?
Nothing. Hmm.
You know, if you don't say something incredibly interesting in the next 45 minutes, your episode's called Wicked Yeast Infection, right?
I hope to say something.
Well, do your best.
Because I will not want to be known by
them. Well, okay. You might be in trouble then.
Oh, God.
Did they give you, put you on insulin? Did they admit you to the hospital? All that stuff happens?
Absolutely. I was admitted to the hospital almost immediately for 10 days, and they started to put me on insulin almost immediately, monitor my blood sugar, which meant not finger pricks, because at the time there was no such thing as a glucometer, we called it. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to do urine testing. And the way they took my blood sugar was they would actually take venous blood, which means they were poking my arms at least 4 times a day. I think I counted in 10 days I was there, I had blood taken out of my arms. I looked like a druggie with all the track, you know, with track marks up and down my arms. They were taking blood at least 4 times a day, sometimes more.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take for the dinner rolls to stop falling out of your pants?
The dinner rolls.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh, okay.
I love your, like, I watched your little, like, mathematical mind go, those words don't have anything to do with what we're talking about. That was very interesting. Did the yeast infection clear up pretty quickly?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. All right.
I'm like, yeah, okay, I got that now. Yes. Oh, we're speaking metaphors, right?
I don't really know how to speak clearly, so we're going to have to go that way.
Okay.
So that cleared up very quickly with the introduction of the insulin.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I will say, as I once told my husband, which could be the title of this show, metaphors are not my cup of tea. So.
Look at you being funny. Okay, that's fine. All right, I got you.
I am a very, I think abstractly spatially, but I don't think abstractly when we speak. I am a very literal person. And so.
No, yeah, I know. I could see the look on your face. You were lost. You were like, what the hell is this guy talking about? You listen to this podcast, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And you didn't, you still weren't following. You were just like, I'm done. Don't know what we're talking about. Okay. So
I'm hospitalized for 10 days.
Yep.
They put me on, did not start on beef and pork insulin at that time. This would have been 1984. I made notes. Wow. And I was on what they called human insulin, recombinant DNA. Mm-hmm. And I guess I did pretty well on that. And, you know. And stayed on that for a long, long time. I could not tell you when I went on to MDI, but I know I started Lantus and Humalog. I'm going to guess right after, whenever Lantus soon came out.
Okay.
And was on a sliding scale.
Sort of like the late 80s, 88, probably. 89 in there somewhere.
Well, I want to guess it was after I moved to this country, which would have been in 90. Yes.
Oh, so they didn't. Oh, you left Canada. That's how you upgraded your insulin, because they would have kept you on that regular NPH forever, probably.
Quite likely, because things tend to get approved there much later than they do here.
Right, right. So. Okay. Oh, so what did you move for? Was it for school?
Yeah, graduate school.
Okay. Not a boy?
Nope.
Good for you.
Not yet.
Oh. There's a move in here somewhere that involves a boy.
Oh, no. It's just, yeah, met him in graduate school, but
oh,
yes.
Gotcha. Oh, not yet for him. So you moved from Canada to, what was the thing you noticed? Do you remember going from regular NPH to just MB, you know, to Lantus and Humalog or something like that?
I don't remember, but it was more shots per day because the regular, you know, NPH, you know, was only a twice a day thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you recall if that seemed like bothersome?
Or if at all. No. You know, it was funny because, I mean, so I became diabetic at 18 and a half, and I was telling a friend of mine, a gentleman I know who is a type 2 researcher here at the big university in my town. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him the story, and he said, when I said I became diabetic at 18 and a half, he said, oh, what a great age to become diabetic. I'm like, okay.
Usually the argument I get is everyone says the opposite of their thing. So if they're young, people go, oh, it's terrible to be diagnosed when you're young. It'd be better if you were older. You'd have more time to live without it, blah, blah, blah. You go find an older person that was diagnosed when they were 40 and they go, oh, you know, being diagnosed when you're older, it's terrible because you know this life without diabetes. And I would have been much better if I was diagnosed when I was young. Everyone thinks the opposite of what happened to them would be better. So,
of course.
Yeah.
So, yeah, being diagnosed at 18 and a half, and he said, what a great age to become diabetic. I think he was just thinking in terms of not going through the teenage years of rebellion, was my thought.
It's a valid observation for sure.
Not arguing with it. So for the most part, at least when I was in the hospital, I remember meeting with a dietitian, you know, my mom and I was still living at home, obviously. I was in high school at 18 and a half, you know, and my mom did the cooking. And so we met with a dietitian who sort of organized, you know, my life and my day and what I would eat. I mean, it wasn't a matter of telling me what I needed to eat. It was more of a matter of what do you eat and how can we kind of tailor that based on your insulin. You know, every meal was kind of like, you know, one carb, you know, one serving of bread, two servings of fruit, and told me all the sort of free veggies I could eat, which were green leafy vegetables and broccoli. And my mom said to her, well, what if we all ate this way? And we were never bad, poor eaters, just saying. My mom asked her, what if we all ate this way? And she said, you'd all be very healthy people. And so...
Go for that. And then you left the country to get away from it. You're like, I'm getting out of here. All this lettuce.
No. And so, you know, my mom, and I get this from my mom and I are really, you know, rule followers, right? Mm-hmm. And so it became my way of life. And I was never the type of person to love like giant sort of pieces of cake with icing that's 2 inches thick. I was just never that type of person. And my mother always used to say, you know, thank goodness she wasn't that type of person because, you know, according to her, she couldn't eat it now. You know, and, you know, according to my mother, I would rather, which is true for me, of course, I would rather eat a piece of pound cake than a piece of cake with a ton of icing, just, you know, regardless of the density of pound cake.
Sure. But. Sure. No, I understand. I absolutely understand. And I have like a sweet tooth when I get involved in that stuff. Like I can avoid it forever. But if you said to me, I think, oh, pound cake, that's good. But I think of pound cake as having icing on it. So.
Oh, I don't. Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't. It's very interesting. Honestly, some people just have that, like you get lit up by sugar. And so I think some people like almost have the opposite to it, that it puts them off.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, I won't pass up a piece of dark chocolate if you gave it to me and stuff, but small quantity. It's not like I will eat a whole chocolate bar
of it.
Or a candy bar, as you call it in this country. We call them chocolate bars. We used to call them chocolate bars. So
I got overwhelmed by a pound of fudge recently that was brought into the house. Then eventually when it was gone, my wife goes, where the hell's that fudge? I was like, you shouldn't have left it here. And she goes, where? And I'm like, in the house. I was like, it's not here anymore. But I was having like a little piece of it every once in a while. And then I looked back over like the 2 weeks that it took to eat it. I was like, every once in a while meant anytime I walked through the first floor of the house. I was like, oh, look, the fudge. So yeah, well, good. You're not burdened. So no big deal. Did you make the big switch in your eating?
I did. Yeah. You know, I kind of cut out, you know, a lot of fat and, you know, I used to sort of butter my bread and I cut that out. You know, I mean, I learned that, you know, protein and fat can slow down the absorption. I mean, I have to say I was pretty, I thought, reasonably educated until I listened to your podcast.
So how long does that go for? You're living like sort of the way you just described.
Oh, currently as well. Forever.
When did you find the podcast?
During COVID.
Oh, just a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah. Probably only two or three years ago.
All right. So you were MDI for a while. Eventually, did you get to a pump?
Only like 2 years ago.
Oh, okay. So you were MDI the entire time. Were you using Lantus and Humalog the whole time?
Absolutely. Through two pregnancies.
Wow. How old are your kids?
18 and 25.
18 and 25. Oh, that's pretty close to mine. What was your control like through that time? No CGM, by the way?
No.
Okay. So
I've only been wearing a CGM probably for 5 years.
Okay. So what were your A1Cs like 18 years old till a few years ago, 5 years ago?
Okay. 18 years old, I have no idea because I...
Not paying attention.
Well, who the hell could look up their medical record when you're 18 years old?
So you know, it's like you're all right or you're not all right. When you go to the doctors, it's either like everything's fine or...
Oh, no, 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 No. I mean, now they do a finger prick when I go to the doctor and they test my A1C and they come back and tell me, you know, 10, no, and that's only been in the last 5 or 7 years when they can do an A1C in the office. Before, I would get a blood draw, never look up my medical record until I have now access to it on my phone. Before that, I had no idea what my A1C was. Okay, that said, I, you know, as a rule follower, you know, I have to think I was in pretty good control. So up until the last 5 years, I mean, my A1C was probably in the sixes, low sevens.
But that's a guess. You really don't know.
Oh, no. I looked up my A1C.
Oh, you did look them up. Okay.
For you. In 2019, I had an A1C of 6.6.
Oh, okay. Great. That's terrific.
And then 6.8, 7.2 in 2020, I was hitting 6.1. So it's always been in the sixes. And then I went on a pump.
Are all those A1Cs with a CGM?
Yes.
So you don't know what it was prior to the CGM, though? Okay.
No.
Gotcha. You don't have any complications?
Well, that's a sort of another story. I have other issues, yes.
Diabetes related?
I would like to think.
Why do you want to think it?
I think I've had issues that are more prevalent in diabetics, but not an exact result of diabetes.
Frozen
shoulder.
See, the camera's on. I saw you reach up towards your shoulders, so I knew what you were going to say.
What else? I touched my shoulders.
Yeah.
A skin condition called granuloma annulare.
Is that the dark spots?
Little rough patches of skin.
Are they dark?
They're little red bumpy patches. It kind of looks like someone once said to me, oh, it looks like you, because I had it on my legs, a few spots on my legs. Oh, it looks like you got into the poison ivy. It just looks like red little bumpy patches.
Granuloma annulare is a benign skin condition characterized by small raised bumps that form a ring with a normal or sunken center. The cause of granuloma annulare is unknown and is found in patients of all ages. Condition tends to be seen in otherwise healthy people. All right, I'm going to go to the pictures. Oh, that's interesting.
It's amazingly innocuous. Like, it doesn't bother me in any way, except it just little rough patches of skin that for the most part are on my abdomen that I can hide. So
it's not constant, though. Is that correct?
I have had spots of it for months at a time, and then they'll kind of fade away and reappear in other places.
Do you do anything to them? Cortisone or something like that?
Nothing. They don't itch. Sometimes they'll itch, but really, absolutely nothing.
Super interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. But you think it's, but I don't see anything here about it being diabetes related.
Okay, then maybe it isn't.
Right. I mean, I got to be honest with you. There's no reason. If you're taking a picture of an old person's skin condition on their arm, there's no reason their bare breast needs to be in it, too. I just want to tell that to Google right now.
Little TMI.
I mean, yes. there's significant change. Like, some people have it everywhere, and then some people don't. It's just like little patches. It's interesting.
Which is what I have. I have small patches here and there.
Okay.
Randomly located.
Do your kids have it?
No.
Okay. Would they tell you if they did as an adult? I always wonder that. Like, you know, you spend so much time connected with your children, and then they get older. Like, if something happened, they're not going to call you and be like, yo, guess what? Like, you stop learning about it. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think my daughter at 18, she would probably still tell me things. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I got to get rid of this elderly breast. Excuse me. There we go. That was enough of that. That made me feel older.
I've had, well, welcome to my world. Yes.
I was like, oh, it's not how I remember them.
My endocrinologist has said, oh, yeah, like I've had other issues I've had conditions with my eyes, which was not for the squeamish. But
did you have to get the needles?
No, I had something really bad done to my eyes, which I shouldn't say have. Thank goodness, touch wood. I had a condition called map dot fingerprint dystrophy.
What the hell? I'm going to keep my browser open if you're going to keep talking. Hold on a second.
I'm going to. That's fine.
Map dot.
Dot fingerprint.
Don't worry, dystrophy. It came right up. Not a lot of things. Is it serious? Typically, will flare up occasionally for a few years and then go away on its own with no lasting loss of vision. How does it appear?
Incredible pain in your eyes, because basically what happens is your cornea is made up of a series of layers, and the outermost layer kind of comes away from the surface. Mm-hmm. And my ophthalmologist told me, oh yeah, your cornea is like a rug on a hardwood floor, slipping around. And I had a condition. So I had that condition. I was in extreme pain. I could not tolerate light. I had to wear dark glasses, sit in dark rooms, until I had what's called a super K in both eyes, which is a super keratectomy, which...
in-office procedure to remove the epithelial and any redundant tissue.
Ew. So basically, they take a Dremel remove... Okay, and this is where, if you're squeamish, just stop listening. They basically take a Dremel-like instrument and remove the outer layer of the cornea of my eye.
Yeah, they grind your eye down a little bit.
Which you don't feel.
Okay.
And they gave me some Valium for it, and then they put a bandage contact lens over your eye to kind of protect it, and mm-hmm. you regrow that outer layer in about 2 days. However, it's 2 days of Vicodin.
As you say, you're high as a kite, right? You're just like, hey, I'll just stay alive and not feel this. Ooh, I'm sorry. I need a second. That's terrible. Like, it really took me back. Like, the Dremel thing, like, I know what a Dremel is, but I was wondering if people didn't know what they were thinking, but like, just like a rotary sander almost.
Yeah, don't even ask.
Do you get to see it? Or is it healed by the time you uncover it?
No, because they're working on your eye. It's just blurry.
I mean, by the time they uncover it, is it healed? Or do you see it like bloody or weird or anything like that?
Oh, no, it's not bloody at all.
No kidding.
I mean, it's basically a 5-minute procedure in the ophthalmology sort of center. And I go home and I then take Vicodin for 2 days. Because if you've ever gotten a scratch on your cornea and you know the pain that causes, imagine this pain and multiply it by about 1,000.
Yeah. After your eyeball just got tattooed. You know what I keep thinking? Who thought of this? Like, who was the first physician who said, you know what we can do for people with this condition? Why don't we grind a layer of their cornea off? And somebody else went, oh, what a wonderful idea. Let's do that. It's like, seriously, who's the... Because it helped you, right?
Oh, hell yes.
Yeah. Who thought of that? That's genius.
I mean, there was one point when I was in so much pain before I had the procedure done. I was like standing in my living room that night and I said to myself... I was in so much pain. I said to myself, if I throw myself through this plate glass window, I didn't want to kill myself.
But stop that?
I said, if I throw myself through this plate glass window and cut myself with these shards of glass, it might take my mind off the pain I'm having in my eye.
Jeez, I can't imagine that. But that's not necessarily from diabetes either, is it?
I don't think so. I know. My ophthalmologist says... Oh, this is really common. I'm like, oh, common in your profession, yeah, but
yeah, not for the profession. Rest of us. The rest of us don't find this common at all.
No, not at all. No.
Okay, so you get the little skin thing, you got the eye thing, you got the diabetes. What else?
Frozen shoulder. Yeah, I mean, that's probably about it, right, at this stage in my life.
You almost said right now. Oh, it's interesting because you're in a really kind of flux place, because the way you stayed so long in that Humalog, Lantus, no CGM thing. What? Right. And then you're saying the podcast made you, did you get the podcast before the CGM or the CGM before the podcast?
CGM, I was on the Freestyle Libre before the podcast. Okay. Yes.
And when you got that, was it to you just merely like, oh, I don't have to like poke my fingers anymore? Or did you see the bigger picture?
It was mind blowing. Because I was on MDI four shots a day, sometimes five, because just to maintain better control. It was mind-blowing that I could see my blood sugar constantly, all day.
So you like the numbers. Obviously, you've brought this up already. So what what did having the data do for you?
It just brought me in better control. I mean, it just, you really added another layer to my ability to control things.
It's funny because I ask that question to see if someone will pop up and be like, this exact thing happened and this is what led to this. But it really isn't. It's just seeing it and then being able to see cause and effect more visually.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And then you just start making different decisions because you know what's going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the amazing thing is your podcast. Oh my goodness. Now that I'm 57 and no longer sort of, you know, at the control of my under being affected by hormones.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. That part's over now.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
No one ever told me that hormones could affect my blood sugar. Nobody ever told me.
You lived all that time not knowing what all that fluctuation was?
Correct.
How did you manage through pregnancy then? Because insulin needs really rack up. Oh, they don't even know, I guess, then.
Well, I didn't have a CGM then. I had really good, lots of because I was in a high-risk clinic, not just with my son, who was born when I was 32. So I was in a high-risk clinic with him. And then when my daughter was born, I was 39. So I was sort of hit the...
Were they turning your insulin up during the pregnancy?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay. But they were just doing it based on blood work?
Based on my little form, you know, my little blood glucose thing book I would fill out.
Oh, okay. So you were testing with a meter, writing down your book, and then it was as simple as these numbers are a little high. We're going to give you more insulin.
That's all it was.
Huh. Kids came out okay? Were they real big or anything?
My son was the size of a 2-month-old.
Mm. That's pretty common, especially back then for people with diabetes.
He was, and you know, they were not alarmed by it. He was 10 pounds, 15 ounces.
Okay. Yeah.
And so they said, you know, he'll be fine. He was in the PICU for the first 24 hours because they wanted to watch his blood sugars. And they said, you know, he will gain weight like every baby does, but at a slower pace, all the other babies will catch up to him.
Pretty quickly. Yeah. Right.
Exactly. And my daughter was not that big. And yeah, I mean, basically my doctors told me, and they took pretty good care of me, except when my endocrinologist went on vacation and I had someone else, you know.
Bye, Bonnie, I'm leaving.
Well, he went on vacation for a week or two and someone else had to fill in for him during one of my visits. And I would go see a doctor like every week, if not 2 weeks, you know, every week or two. And I was... In any case, so he went on vacation and someone else was filling in and he said, oh, yeah, we're going to change your insulin and we're going to do this, 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 and this. And I looked at him and I said, no, you're not.
Yeah, we'll wait for the guy to come back. Don't worry. Where do people vacation from the Midwest? Would you go to a lake or something?
I suppose you could. You go south where it's warm.
I was going to say, because you don't have access to the beaches and like, or you got to go on long flights to get to water.
We have the Great Lakes.
Yeah, that's not, you don't know. It's not the same thing. It's like I had a little girl. No. I had a little girl from Canada tell me about a bagel she was eating. I was like, have you ever been in New York? And she goes, no. I'm like, you've never had a bagel. You don't even know what you're talking about. Seriously, you don't know if you haven't been. A New York bagel is a different thing.
It's like a Montreal bagel.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But I'm saying, like, when you're on the coasts, people vacation, generally speaking, on islands and at the beach and things like that, because that's the kind of like, it's close and it's accessible. Every time I've met somebody who's come in from the Midwest, the first thing they were like is like, can we see the ocean? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, if you want to, it's only going to be exciting for 20 seconds. So,
For the most part, we do vacation via airplane.
Yeah, you have to, right? Like you can't like just drive somewhere. Anyway, this is not the point.
Well, except during COVID. So we did vacation at a little Airbnb.
Just to get away,
which was like 20 minutes from here on a lake.
Let's drive to a different house and sit inside of that one for a while.
Well, it was on a lake, so.
So you're using a CGM. Things are coming together for you, but you're not making any big leaps, right? Like
not huge.
Okay.
Significant. Yeah, my blood sugar, my A1Cs are probably down in the sixes. Yes. Oh,
that's amazing. That's really fantastic. But are you still a good eater all these years later?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, that
and
stuck
still
with you.
Am.
That stuck with you, that one conversation with that doctor.
Absolutely.
And did your mom change the whole family over like she talked about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It wasn't like she was going to cook for me separately.
There's no special chef coming in and handling the different meals.
Oh, hell no.
No. Okay, so you find the, I guess you say because of COVID, you found the podcast, you're just bored?
I do like to exercise and I'll go for long walks. And I used to go for walks while watching, you know, shows on streaming services. I don't know if I'm allowed to.
You can say whatever you want. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, Netflix or whatever.
I thought you were going to say it's porn. I'm sorry. I didn't realize. Go ahead. I got you now.
Yeah. I would watch a show while I walked outside. And then I realized, yeah, this is a little dangerous when I'm walking on streets. And so I decided I need to find podcasts to listen to so I'm not impacted visually as well.
You were a person walking along watching television on your phone in front of your face. Did you ever walk into anything?
No.
Ever get hit by a car or close?
No. I mean, you know, I had a few close mishaps calls. On sidewalk, you know, on curbs and sidewalks.
Again, Midwest could have been a tractor. Who knows? So, exactly. Okay, so you look for is that thing that I hear people say, did that happen to you? Or they go, it just hits them one day. They go, oh, there's podcasts about everything. I bet you there's one about diabetes.
Bingo.
Yeah, that's how it happens, right? Isn't that crazy?
Bingo. And so, you know, my search for that then led me to, you know, the Facebook search and this group on the private group on Facebook. And it's absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so through this podcast, you know, learning about pumps, and I'm like, oh, pump. Oh,
no,
that's
idea.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which pump do you have now?
I use Omnipod.
Okay. Yeah.
5.
So I basically sold that to you. So if they're listening right now, they should keep buying their ads. Yeah. Right. But yeah, that's amazing. So because you're so, I mean, so many decades into it.
Right.
It seems uncommon that you would have made like the modernization happen. But what happened? You heard people talking about it and you were just like, why am I not doing this? Or?
Yeah. And I'm a real researcher before I do something. So I have to do a lot of research, which means internet research prior to doing something. But at the same time, you know, I love to exercise and I used to, you know, currently I will walk 4 or 5 miles a day every day. That's my off. Those are my off days.
What does that take?
Hour and 10 minutes ish. Okay. And which is a perfect amount of time to listen to your podcast. And that's on my off days. And on my on days, I will bike ride, I will row, I will cross country ski. I used to be a really avid rower until I had hip flexor issues. Mm-hmm. I could go off on a whole tangent about rowing. But, you know, I used to, and I still do, I used to always hit lows. While I would do intense exercise, I would always go low.
Okay.
My endocrinologist said to me, she said, you know, we can help that. And I'm like, how? She said, a pump. I'm like, okay. So after her telling me that for a couple visits in a row, I finally decided, okay, let's do a pump.
You'll go for it. Wow. That's good. Do you think you'll do an algorithm ever?
I do.
Oh, wait. You're doing Omnipod 5.
Omnipod 5, yes.
Oh, not that. Okay. I'm sorry. And that is helping you with your exercise?
To a degree.
Yeah. It's tough. Even if you do really vigorous exercise, there's still things you need to do.
Yes.
Listen, Arden got low last night packing her room up to leave college. All she was doing is packing bags, like doing dishes, loading her car. And she's like, Dad, I got low overnight. And she's like, it was hard to get it back up. And I said, no, I thought so. I said, we probably should have done something, a little restriction of your insulin. And she's like, didn't the algorithm, and because she's using IAPS right now. And I looked and it was taking her basal away forever. And still the exercise, like, you know, got her like to like a 55 blood sugar at some point.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like me washing my car or doing yard work, I will always go low. Okay. That said, I love to run low.
How low?
I mean, I love to run low. I love to run in, you know, the 90s. Oh, I mean, yeah, I don't mean run as in go running. I mean, I love to stay low. But for me to, and I will go into the 60s almost every day, at least once a day. Mm-hmm. Because for me, it's easier to control a blood sugar in the 60s and just nudge it back up than for me to deal with a high blood sugar and bring it back down.
Is that something you learned on your own or something you heard from the podcast?
For the most part, learned on my own. I was doing that. So, sorry to say.
No. I don't. I mean that you. My expectation is that in 30 years you would have figured that out.
40?
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. By the way, I'd like to be really clear about something in case I haven't been. I'm not saying anything magical in the podcast. Like it's just that kind of common sense stuff about insulin management that people don't talk about. So nobody hears about it. So the next thing you know, it's 30 years later and they, you know, been doing it like this forever. That's all.
But you are saying things that, like I said, things my doctor never told me.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like here's another example. Pre-bolus.
I am always stunned by how few people have ever thought about timing their meal insulin.
Yeah. 39. Well, I've been pre-bolusing for a while now. Okay. So let's say I've been pre-bolusing for 2 years. Mm-hmm. 7 years, no one ever told me to pre-bolus.
Yeah, just match up your insulin a little better with the food. What I meant was is that it's not like I got on the podcast. I'm like, all right, everybody, listen, I'm going to tell you how to jump from universe to universe. It's, you know, like, I mean, it's not crazy. Like, oh my God, only this one guy knows these things. Like people, the problem I found with the diabetes space is that people come in, obviously they don't know anything. They're mostly left to figure stuff out on their own. Some do and go their own way, and some don't and live in a struggle. Neither of those two people are telling everyone else, hey, have you considered pre-bolusing your meals? Like you either don't know and you're gone, or you figured it out and you're back to your life and it's not your job to tell other people. I just was in candor. I was just one of the first people with a wide audience who was willing to say, this is how insulin works. You should probably understand this, you know, and nobody else would say, by the way, I knew people who understood it, people who had diabetes, who were in the diabetes space and writing blogs and like making money and doing all the things, but they would never tell people how they manage their blood sugar. And they would hide behind, well, everybody's different, you know? And I'm like, that's not why. You don't want to take responsibility for saying this out loud. That's what this is, you know, just like for the same goddamn reason some doctors won't tell you and they know.
Well, yeah, it's the same reason I don't go on a job site and tell a contractor they're not OSHA compliant, you know? I don't want the responsibility of it.
Just look the other way. It's fine.
No, basically. No, seriously.
No, I understand. Yeah. No.
I mean, I don't want the liability. I mean, there's actual liability. Yes.
Yeah. One of the things that actually, you know, I say sometimes some of the little things you'll never realize that help people with diabetes through me, cell phones. Cell phones were a big deal because I can now talk into this microphone and you can hear the thing without too much trouble or expense. Like, so having cell phones proliferates podcasts, that ends up helping people with diabetes. Being podcasts becoming something that people are like understand now and they're normal allows me to say, nothing you hear on the Juice Box podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. And then we're all kind of like in this day and age, we're all good with that. We all have agreed as a society, we know what this means. There is, you know, maybe no shortage of tens of thousands of podcasts telling people how to manage their health. And at some point during each one of them, somebody goes, hey, this isn't advice. I'm just telling you what I do. But 20 years ago, if you would have written a blog and said, hey, here's how you pre-bolus, someone would have come along and said, you can't give medical advice to people. And if you would have said, I'm just sharing my experiences, they would have said, no, you're giving people medical advice, because society hadn't gotten to this point yet.
Of course, it's one of the
simple ways that I now get, I mean, uncountable numbers of messages, emails, and, you know, whatnot about people who are like, oh my God, look, my A1C is 6.1. Like, so cool. Like, in my life, I didn't expect to hear you save my life thousands of times, because, I mean, who knew that was going to happen? But on the other side of it, I don't feel like I did. I feel like I just pointed and went, you should know about that, you know, so.
And it shocks me that my doctors, and I mean, I haven't had a huge number of doctors mm-hmm. not tell me this. And I don't mean to diss my doctors either. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. I want to say, and I don't take you that way. And I also hope that doctors don't take it that way. Jenny and I are recording in a series right now. We're pretty far into the recording of it. It'll come out next year. I'm going to actually tell you how far we are into it right now. It's in this folder here. And then this, boy, there's a lot of folders. Look at all these folders. I actually have a folder that's called Needs Organizing. Do you think that's good news? It's not. It's bad news. Jenny and I have now 1, 2, 3, 4. We've now recorded 5 episodes of something that we're going to call Grand Rounds, which is just talking to physicians about what people with diabetes need from them. And we don't imagine that we're going to be able to attract all the doctors, but some will. And the conversations are set up so that they're talking to the doctor about, like, hey, this is what you should be expecting and what you should be doing and what these people deserve. But at the same time, if you listen from a patient's perspective, what you're hearing is, this is what I deserve. This is what I should be asking for. This is what I should be expecting. And, you know, Jenny gets fired up. Like, for people who've only heard her, like, in, like, pro tips or bold beginnings, and she's all, like, you know, Wisconsin-y and, like, oh, it's okay, and like all sweet and everything. You should see how upset she gets when she thinks about people with diabetes not being given reasonable information. And as we're having this conversation, it's ringing in my head. Are we going to turn doctors off to this? And what I eventually figured was, they need to, like, take their part of this responsibility here. Like, I can't hold their hand and tell them they're doing a great job, because a lot of them just aren't. And if hopefully some of them will hear it is, you know, my expectation.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know how open doctors are to critique. And as architects, we are always open to critique. But yeah, I mean, having gone through this for 39 years, I'm amazed at what my doctors haven't told me. But by the same token, I understand that, you know, they're looking for, like, you know, they're looking, I want to say, for big picture, serious things, like, have I lost circulation in my feet? I mean, you know, that's a bigger issue than perhaps,
well, by the way, you might not lose the circulation in your feet if you'd tell me how to pre-bolus my freaking meal. Like, it's, thank, and that's you, the thing we talk about in the series, is how,
thank you,
how they're so willing to see you in an emergency room situation and go, oh, this person, man, got a high A1C, blood sugar's all over the place. They don't know what they're doing. They gave up. They don't even understand. Like, they're willing to talk about people like that, but they're not willing to take responsibility for not putting the person on the right path 20 years before they ended up in the emergency room.
Being proactive.
Yeah. It's absolutely your fault, not their fault. Anyway, that's what that series is going to be like. And she gets real.
No, I think it's amazing. I think it's done
sometimes. We're all upset. We, like, stop the recording. We sit back, like, oh my God. Like,
I remember when I was pregnant and they said, you know, it's critical that you check your blood sugar 2 hours after a meal and that it be within normal range, like around, you know, 90 to 110 or something like that. And I'm like, okay, but you haven't told me how to do that.
How should I do that? Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is there a way you would say that would work for that? Because I've had diabetes a while and it's never gone that way.
Right. So, let's, you know, tell me means and methods and I'll give you an outcome, right?
Yeah. It's all I'm saying, by the way. And I'm not, you know, it's funny, as we talked about how the internet matured society about their expectations about what was being said to them. Things change. I would say as recently as 4 years ago, I would be told by doctors that I was doctor bashing.
Oh.
And like that would have, actually, there's a great episode called Listen to the Doctor, where an endo comes on and admits to listening, lovely woman, comes on to tell me how she started to listen to the podcast and was like, oh my God, this guy's doctor bashing. And then kept listening and eventually says in the episode, you know, a large part of how I now treat my patients with diabetes is from you in this podcast.
That's amazing.
And I was like, that's so cool. But anyway, nobody tells me I'm doctor bashing anymore because society's moving forward. Like, all of a sudden, you know, back then it was like, you're complaining, you're blaming us. And I'm like, it seems like you have some responsibility in this. And only 4 or 5 years later, people don't think like that anymore. Now they're like, yeah, I deserve for someone to give me good information. I'm dragging people's expectations into the future is what I'm trying to do. Like you should expect better than what you're getting. Yes, you have to put the work in, but to your point, which you've made like 6 times now, if I don't know the tools, I can't do the work, you know?
Right.
That's it. Super simple. It's all very simple. People would just listen to me. It would be fine. But no one in my house listens to me. Anyway, I can't wait to put this series out and hear through the grapevine how I'm making fun of doctors. But
I think people need to understand that, you know, people are critiqued, at least, you know, as architects, we critique each other. We go through school getting critiqued. And, you know, critique is not necessarily positive or negative. It's just
people's perspective.
Here's an analysis.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly, this is my perspective of
what you're doing.
The thing you're doing. Listen, exactly. I got to tell you, for any doctors listening, and I don't mean to curse because you've been so nice lately, but I take it pretty frequently from people who are like, this podcast, he doesn't do this right. He doesn't do that right. Why does he talk so much? How come he won't let them talk? Like, I'm like, yeah, I got to hear it. You got to hear it. How's that?
I can be salty if you really want me to.
No. You're a Canadian in the beginning. So I know you guys are stabby. You don't shoot people. You like to curse. That's pretty much what I know about Canadians.
I can get pretty salty when I'm coxing races. So
you have to hear the episode that came out today. It's called Canadian Clown Car. It's this 9-year-old little girl. So her mom sets up the recording like it's for her. And I mean, you've now been through this with me. I don't put almost any effort into making sure you're here. So like, it's really on you to show up, you know? And so the microphone comes on, I go, hello. And it's this little girl's voice. And I was like, I'm like going through my notes real quick. I'm like, am I talking to a little kid? I'm not. Like, what's going on? And I think the mom just set me up. Like, she just booked for herself and then stuck the kid on the show. So I have this conversation. It's a really great, actually, with this like 9-year-old little girl, but she's Canadian. And, you know, I do all my like better Canadian humor with her. I was like, you know, dog sleds. That's how you get things places. They don't grow apples in Canada, do they? She's like, yeah, I've been to an orchard. I'm like, there are no orchards in Canada. And she's like, yes, there are. I'm like, I don't understand. I'm like, Canada's just a big piece of snow. And I was like, I don't even know how you're on this call with me. You live in an igloo and, you know, like that kind of stuff. And I was like, at one point I was like, wait a minute. I'm like, are you where Santa lives? And she goes, no, that's the North Pole. And I'm like, those aren't the same place. And she's like, you know, so we're doing all that. And at some point she says something about the cars in America. And I said, how do you know there are cars in America? And she goes, well, there are. And I was like, have you ever been here? And she goes, no. And I'm like, are you sure? And I got down to like an existential moment with a 9-year-old where she goes, yeah, I guess I'm not sure that there are cars in Canada. And I was like, right. I was like, for instance, are you in a room right now? And she goes, yes. I said, is the door closed? And she goes, yeah. And I said, is there a clown on the other side of the door?
Oh, boy.
And she goes, really? you should hear. She goes, no.
She's had nightmares.
Oh, my God, there might be. And I was like, right. Anyway, I love Canadians. All right, so I am on a super tight schedule today. So I need to ask you the question a little earlier than I normally would. What have we haven't talked about that we should have?
Oh, no, I think we hit everything.
We did okay?
Tangents and otherwise.
You used like three words I don't know. I didn't write them down because I didn't want to be like, did you say starkly at some point? No, not starkly. What did you say at one point?
Oh, I can't remember. Tangents? Is that one?
Tangent, I know. That was insulting. Like, she's like, does he not know tangent?
Okay, you're asking me to recall things.
No, you don't have to. I'll go back.
That I learned, you know, orally, and I'm a visual learner, so... I have to think now.
I just thought of the worst joke that I'm not going to say.
Okay.
I mean, it's horrifying. I'm not going to say it. I'll tell you when we're done recording. But yeah, we haven't missed anything big picture stuff. Like you know, it's funny. I meant to say this earlier. I asked you why you wanted to come on the podcast. And really your answer was, I've just had experiences. I'd like people to know about them. I think that would help them.
Yeah.
I always think someone's going to say something like super specific. And they never really do. It's always just like, I think if people listen to what happened to me, it might help them, which I think is lovely, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's some free advice for other podcasts. I think where some other podcasts go wrong is they decide this episode's about this specific thing. And then they try to talk about this one idea for an hour. And I'm like, that's like 4 minutes of conversation. You know what I mean? Like you can't break this thing down that far. Like it just, it's boring.
Oh, I know what I wanted
to
say.
You got one. Go ahead.
That when I first went on the pump, I was on Dash because the Omnipod 5 algorithm wasn't out. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked beyond belief that my blood sugar could be straight lines.
The first time it happens, it throws people off.
Absolute shock. I mean, quite literally, you could have picked my jaw up off of the floor. Mm-hmm.
I have a graphic when I speak in person, and I go, hey, here's a graph, 24-hour graph from this little girl. And it's pretty choppy, like really choppy, kind of all over the place. And I said I spoke to her mother privately, and we fixed her basal insulin. And then the next graph comes up, and I go, and that's her blood sugar the next 24 hours. And they people are just like, wait, what? And I was like, yeah. So it bowls them over when they first see it. It's all about timing and amount. So
absolutely. I could not believe I could ever have blood sugars like that.
Yeah. And it's not that difficult to accomplish once you know how to do it. Have a couple tools and it takes time. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's not easy.
Oh, it takes time. Yeah. And my endocrinologist is really good at sort of on a granular level, really dialing up and down my basal, at least at the time when I was not on an algorithm, really dialing my basal up and down to get me that straight line. Mm-hmm. Utterly shocked.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So the people at Insulet, I have to say, and other pump makers, I applaud you. That said, when I go low, don't take away my basal.
Forever and ever?
Well, it's frustrating because I'm on so little insulin a day. I probably take on average like 22 units a day total insulin. And so when I go low, you take away my basal, but I don't need the basal now when I'm low. I need it like in an hour, and you've taken away all my basal, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to.
It's too late now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the algorithm, listen, first go around for these algorithms. I can't wait to see them in a few more years. Seriously.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so the low life intern who's sitting and listening to all your podcasts.
You think they make a person listen? Also, don't call them a low life. I know some of them. They're lovely.
Oh, I'm sure they are. Okay. I'll say the intern.
Low level.
Yes, exactly. I'm sorry.
So you believe that in every company, by the way, this is true. I know this is true, but in every company, for people who have never thought about this, there's somebody whose task it is to listen to this podcast.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That happens. And then they talk about it in meetings and stuff like that. I have a great story. I wonder if I'll ever be able to tell it, about how Medtronic became an advertiser. I don't know. I'll have to see if I can tell that story. I'll have to think about it. All right. Thank you so much.
You need to go.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Bonnie. Hold on one second for me. Jalen is an incredible example of what so many experience living with diabetes. You show up for yourself and others every day, never letting diabetes define you. And that is what the Medtronic Champion community is all about. Each of us is strong, and together, we're even stronger. To hear more stories from the Medtronic Champion community, or to share your own story, visit MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox and look out online for the hashtag Medtronic Champion. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy my full conversation with Jalen coming up in just a moment. A huge thanks to Dexcom for supporting the podcast and for sponsoring this episode. Dexcom.com/juicebox. Go get yourself a Dexcom G7 right now using my link. I'd like to thank Cozy Earth for sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box Podcast and remind you that using my offer code JUICEBOX at checkout will save you 40% off of your entire order at CozyEarth.com. That's the sheets, the towels, the clothing, anything available on the website. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording, wrongwayrecording.com. A diabetes diagnosis comes with a lot of new terms, and you're not going to understand most of them. That's why we made Defining Diabetes. Go to juiceboxpodcast.com, up into the menu, and click on Defining Diabetes to find the series that will tell you what all of those words mean. Short, fun, and informative, that's Defining Diabetes. If you're not already subscribed or following in your favorite audio app, please take the time now to do that. It really helps the show. And get those automatic downloads set up so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back very soon with another episode of the Juice Box Podcast. Thanks for hanging out until the end. Now you're going to hear my entire conversation with Jalen. Don't forget, MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox or the hashtag Medtronic Champion on your favorite social media platform.
My name is Jalen Mayfield. I am 29 years old. I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I am originally from Waynesboro, Mississippi. So I've kind of traveled all over. I've just landed here in the Midwest and haven't left since.
Nice. How old were you when you were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes?
I was 14 years old when I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes.
15 years ago. Wow.
Yes.
Okay. 14 years old. What are you like? Do you remember what grade you were in?
I actually do, because we have like an eighth grade promotion. So I had just had eighth grade promotion. So I was going straight into high school. So it was a summer heading into high school.
Was that particularly difficult going into high school with this new thing?
It was unimaginable. You know, I missed my entire summer. So I was going to a brand new school with, you know, our community. We brought three different schools together. So I was around a bunch of new people that I had not been going to school with. So it was hard trying to balance that while also explaining to people what type 1 diabetes was.
Did you even know, or were you just learning at the same time?
I honestly was learning at the same time. My hometown did not have an endocrinologist. So I was traveling almost over an hour to the nearest, you know, pediatrician, like endocrinologist for children. So, you know, outside of that, I didn't have any type of support in my hometown.
Was there any expectation of diabetes? Does somebody else in your family have type 1?
No, I was the first one to have type 1 in my family.
And do you have children now?
I do not.
No. Do you think you will one day?
Still thinking about it, but right now I've just been traveling, focusing on my career and myself. So
what do you do? What's your career?
Yeah, so I am a marketing leasing specialist for a student housing company. So we oversee about 90 properties throughout the U.S. So I've been working for them for about 8 years now.
And you get to travel a lot in that job?
Yes, I experience a lot of travel. It's fun, but also difficult, especially with all your type 1 diabetes supplies and all your electronics. So it's a bit of a hassle sometimes. Mm-hmm.
What do you find that you absolutely need with you while you're traveling, diabetes-wise?
I have learned my biggest thing I need is some type of glucose. I have experienced lows, whether that's on a flight, traveling, walking through the airport. And I used to always experience just being nervous to ask for some type of snack or anything. So I felt like I needed to always have something on me, and that has made it my travel a lot easier.
Okay. So growing up in this small town, what was your initial challenge during diagnosis, and what other challenges did you find along the way?
Yeah, I think the initial one, I felt isolated. I had no one to talk to that it was experiencing what I was going through. You know, people would say, oh, I know this is like hard for you, but I was like, you really don't. Like, I just felt lonely. I didn't know, you know, people were watching everything I did. It was like, you can't eat this, you can't eat that. I felt like all of my childhood had been, you know, I don't even remember what it was like for a life before diabetes at this point, because I felt like that's only thing I could focus on was trying to do a life with type 1 diabetes.
When you found yourself misunderstood, did you try to explain to people, or did you find it easier just to stay private?
I honestly just held back. I didn't really like talking about it. It felt like it was just a repeating record where I was saying things and people weren't understanding it. And I also was still in the process of learning it. So I just, you know, kept it to myself, didn't really talk about it unless I absolutely had to.
Did you eventually find people in real life that you could confide in?
I think I never really got the experience until after getting to college. And then once I graduated college and moving to an even bigger town, that's where I finally found those people where I was like, okay, there's a lot of other people that have type 1 diabetes. And, you know, there's a community out there which I had never experienced before.
Is college where you met somebody with diabetes for the first time, or just where you met more people with different ways of thinking?
So I met my first person with diabetes, actually my freshman year of high school. There was only one other person, and he had had it since he was a kid, like young, once we were like maybe born, mm-hmm. or like right after that time frame. So that was the only other person I knew until I got to college and I started meeting other people. I was a member of the band and I was an RA. So I was like, okay, there's a small handful of people also at my university. But then once I moved to St. Louis, and a lot of my friends I met were like med students and they were young professionals. And that's where I started really getting involved with one of my really close friends to this day. He was also type 1 diabetic. And I was like, that's who introduced me to all these different types of communities and technologies, and which is really what helped jumpstart my learning more with type 1 diabetes.
Do you think, I mean, there was that one person in high school, but you were young. Do you really think you were ready to build a relationship and around diabetes, or did you even know the reason why that would be important at the time?
I didn't, you know, I honestly didn't think about it. I just was like, oh, there's another person in my class that's kind of going through the same thing as I am, but they've also had it a lot longer than I have. So they kind of got it down. They don't really talk about it. And I was like, well, I don't really have much to connect with them.
So I connect with them on. Yeah. No. So now once your world expands, as far as different people, different backgrounds, different places in college, you see the need to connect in real life, but there's still only a few people, but there's still value in that, right?
Correct.
What do you think that value was at the time?
I think it was just what making me feel like I was just a normal person. I just wanted that. And I needed to know that, like, you know, there was other people out there with type 1 diabetes experiencing the same type of, you know, thoughts that I was having.
When were you first introduced to the Medtronic Champions community?
Yeah. So about 2 years ago, I was, you know, I was looking around and I stumbled upon the Medtronic community and I was like, this is something I really, really, I kind of need. You know, I said, all throughout these years, I was, you know, afraid to show my pump. I would wear long sleeves, like didn't want people to see my CGMs because I didn't want people to ask me questions. And, you know, I just felt so uncomfortable. And then I noticed seeing these people really in the Medtronic community, just they embraced it. You could see them. They weren't afraid to show it. And that was something I was really looking forward to.
How is it knowing that your diabetes technology is such an important part of your health and your care and having to hide it? What did it feel like to have to hide that diabetes technology? And how did it feel to be able to kind of let it go?
I refused to go anywhere. I would run to the bathroom. I just didn't want to do it in public because I felt like people were watching me. And that was just one of the hardest things I was trying to overcome. You know, I was fresh out of college, going into the young professional world. So, you know, going out on work events and things like that, I just didn't think to have it out because I was so afraid. But then once I did start, you know, embracing it and showing it, that's when the curiosity came. And it was actually genuine questions and people wanting to know more about the equipment that I'm on and how does this work and what does this mean and things like that, which it kind of inspired me because I was like, okay, people actually do want to understand what I'm experiencing with type 1 diabetes.
What did you experience when the internet came into play and now suddenly as easy as a hashtag and you can meet all these other people who are living with diabetes as well? Can you tell me how that is either different or valuable, I guess, compared to meeting a few people in real life?
Absolutely. I think if you look back from when I was first diagnosed to now, I would have never thought of, like, you know, searching anything for someone with type 1 diabetes. And now it's like, it's all I see. You know, you can easily search Medtronic Champions and you see people that pop up and you're like, wow, look at all this content. And I think that's something that kind of just motivates me, and which is how I've kind of came out of my shell and started embracing more and posting more on my social media with about, you know, how I live with type 1 diabetes. And I think that's something that I hope can inspire everyone else.
What was it like having more personal, intimate relationships in college with type 1?
I think it was kind of hard to explain, you know, just for example, like no one really knows, it understands like what a low is. And I think that was a very hard thing for me to explain. Like you know, it can happen in any moment and I'm sweating. I'm just really like not all there. And I'm trying to explain like, hey, this is what's going on. I need your help. And I think that was something that was hard for me to, you know, I did talk to people about it. So when this happened, they were like, oh, you know, what's going on with you? I'm like, I'm actually a type 1 diabetic. Yeah. This is what's going on. I need your help.
What about once you've had an experience like that in front of someone, was it always bonding or did it ever have people kind of step back and be maybe more, I don't know, leery of your relationship?
After I would tell someone I had type 1 diabetes after some type of event or anything, like they were kind of more upset with me that I didn't tell them up front. Because they were like, you know, I care about you as a person. I would have loved to known this about you. It's not anything you should have to hide from me. And I think that was a lot of the realization that I was going through with a lot of people.
Okay. Let me ask you this. So now we talked about what it was like to be low and to have that more kind of emergent situation. But what about when your blood sugar has been high or stubborn and you're not thinking correctly, but it's not as obvious maybe to you or to them?
Yeah. So I go through my same experiences when I have high blood sugars. You know, I can tell, like, for my coworkers, for example, I didn't really talk to, you know, when I go, I'll backtrack. when I visit multiple sites for work, I usually don't announce it. And so sometimes I'm working throughout the day. I might have snacked, forgot to take some insulin, and my blood sugar is running high. And I'm a little bit more irritable. I'm all over the place. And I'm like, let me stop. Hey, guys, I need to like take some insulin. I'm sorry. I didn't tell you guys I'm a diabetic. So you may be wondering why I'm kind of just a little bit snippy. You know, so I like to make sure I do that now going forward, because that's something I noticed and it was kind of hindering me with my career, because I was, you know, getting irritable because I'm working nonstop and I'm forgetting to take a step back and focus on my diabetes.
Right. Hey, with the advent of new technology like Medtronic CGM and other diabetes technology, can you tell me how that's improved your life and those interactions with people?
Yeah, I can. I feel confident knowing that it's working in the background. As someone, and I've always adamantly said it, I have been someone that's really bad with counting my carbs. So sometimes I kind of undershoot it because I'm scared, but it allows me to just know that, hey, it's got my back if I forget something. And I think that allows me to have a quick lunch, and then I'm able to get back into the work day because it's such a fast paced industry that I work in. So sometimes it is easy to forget. And so I love that I have that system that's keeping track of everything for me.
Let me ask you one last question. When you have interactions online with other people who have type 1 diabetes, what social media do you find the most valuable for you personally? Like, what platforms do you see the most people and have the most good interactions on?
Yeah, I've had tremendous interactions on Instagram. That's where I've kind of seen a lot of other diabetics reach out to me and ask me questions. I've commented and been like, hey, you're experiencing this too. But I've recently also been seeing TikToks and, you know, finding on that side of it, I didn't, you know, see the videos and the fun videos. And I'm like, I would love to do stuff like that, but I just never have the courage. So I'm seeing people make like just the fun engagement videos now, which I love, you know, really bringing that awareness to diabetes.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? Maybe you don't know this, but there's some sort of an age cutoff somewhere where there is an entire world of people with type 1 diabetes existing on Facebook mm-hmm. that don't go into TikTok or Instagram and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I do think it's pretty broken down by, you know, when that platform was most popular for those people by age. But your younger people, I'm acting like I'm 100 years old, but younger people seem to enjoy video more.
Yes, I think it's just because it's something you see. And so it's like, and I think the one thing, and obviously it's a big stereotype around diabetes, is you don't look like you have diabetes. And that's something I always faced. And so when I see other people that are just, you know, normal, everyday people, and I'm like, they have type 1 diabetes just like me. They're literally living their life, having fun. That's just something you want to see, it because you don't get to see people living their everyday lives with diabetes. And I think that's something I've really enjoyed.
Yeah. What are your health goals? When you go to the endocrinologist and you make a plan for the next few months, what are you hoping to achieve, and where do you struggle and where do you see your successes?
I'll be honest, I was not someone who was as, you know, involved in my diabetes. I wasn't really focused on my health. And that was something that, you know, you go into an endocrinologist and you get these results back and it's not what you want to hear. It makes you nervous. It makes you scared. And so I personally, for myself, you know, I was like, this is my chance to change. I know there's people that are living just like me, everyday lives, and they can keep their A1Cs and their blood sugars under control. How can I do this? So I go in with, you know, I would like to see it down a certain number of points each time. I would love for my doctor to be like, hey, I see you're entering your carbs. I see you're, you know, you're not having lows. You're not running high too often. That's my goal. And I've been seeing that. And that's what motivates me every time I go to the endocrinologist, where I don't dread going. It's like an exciting visit for me.
So you like to set a goal for yourself and then for someone to acknowledge it, to give you kind of that energy to keep going for the next goal.
Yeah, I feel as a type 1 diabetic, for me, and it's a lot to balance. It's a hard, hard journey.
Yeah.
And so I want someone, when I go in, I want to be able to know like, hey, I see what you're doing. Let's work together to do this. You don't want to be put down like, you know, you're doing horrible. It's not going to motivate you because you're already fighting a tough battle.
Right.
So just having that motivation and acknowledging the goods and also how we can improve, that's what really has been the game changer for me in the past 2 years.
Jalen, I appreciate you spending this time with me. This was terrific. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
If you enjoyed Jalen's story, check out MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox. I appreciate you listening all the way to the end, so this little bit is just for you. Hello, friend. Hello, friends. Fuck. Hold on, I'm getting there. All right, let's try this again. Hello, friends, and hello, friends. No, hello, hello, friends. Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 1191 of the Juice Box Podcast.